councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
It is a big idea. A new world order.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Either you were with us, or you were with the terrorists.
But I also believe that a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals.
Guns will be taken, and no one will be able to be armed. We're going to take all guns.
For many of the police and guard troops, it is an uncomfortable job to do this in an American city.
Is global governance at last? Is it one world? The central bank is in charge. But aren't we all just living and dying for what the central banks do?
As for me, give me liberty or give me death!
The answer to 1984 is 1776.
Welcome, my friends. It is Thursday, the 27th day of December 2012, and I'm going to break down the unprecedented assault on the right to keep and bear arms in two times tonight. Once right up here at the front of the show, and then in a second part, breaking down incredible censorship on Facebook of gun owners' profiles. They're just banning them by the thousands everywhere. We've had more than 10 different accounts of myself and crew either outright banned or suspended for posting Gandhi quotes and things. I mean, this is like communist China. So that is coming up in part two tonight, as well as comments on Piers Morgan that I didn't cover on the radio today. And that big story with our petition to deport him nearing 100,000 as of showtime tonight. Number one, the globalists are an economic crime syndicate. They're bankrupting this country. And they've disarmed people in every other country they've taken over. And they've done it the same way. It's for the children, turn your guns in, while they buy billions of rounds of ammo and set up torture centers and put al-Qaeda in charge of countries to murder people like Libya and Syria. They could care less about the kids. This criminal group aren't liberals. They're authoritarians. They stage Fast and Furious that's killed thousands, including hundreds of children, on both sides of the border as a pretext to demonize the Second Amendment. That didn't work out for them. Now they're just talking about executive orders. And Obama can just ban guns if he wants because we say so. He says he can launch wars without congressional approval. Here's some of the latest articles out today, and it's a big stack. American gun owners to be fingerprinted and registered. Feinstein announces nightmare plan in her new bill. And Kurt Nemo goes over that. At Infowars.com, the bad news is Republicans are joining Democrats to destroy the Second Amendment because the same mega banks finance them as well. And that's what they want. They want disarmed slaves, and the prostitute media is going along with this. So we are in very, very deep trouble. Another article at Infowars.com. And then here, of course, is a copy of her talking points with the bill, where she says to protect your rights, you'll turn in most your guns and a forced buyback. But then the others, you'll just get fingerprinted for guns you already own when they register you. So they can then, of course, confiscate them as they've done in country after country. And then, of course, we reported on this last week. Finally, Town Hall, Ammo Land, and others have picked it up because Feinstein's put out public letters. Feinstein and Governor Cuomo admit planning Australian-style government gun buyback program. They've done lots of the drills of the sell guns back if you want. Oh, no, that was just to train you and the police with the images of guns being turned in. Now, it's you do this or we're going to arrest you for terrorism. And, of course, Homeland Security for years has said the new terrorist is the American gun owner. Continuing. Again, New York governor, gun confiscation and forced buyback, an option. That's from last week, now confirmed this week. And let's not forget who they say the terrorists are. Here's The Hill, House Dem, Tea Party is the real enemy. Here's another one. Army colonel ignites firestorm with article on crushing a Tea Party insurgency for the Army War College. They believe that's their new big enemy is, well, us, because they work for foreign banks now. Forbes, how the U.S. military would crush a Tea Party rebellion. go pull that up for yourself. That's what they're training for. Told you this was all coming. See, in the attempted gun confiscation, they know some people will resist. That's then meant to cause the Civil War, and then you won't be called the counter-revolutionaries. You'll be called terrorist. Let's continue. Democratic rep, the real enemy is the Tea Party. Again, another report, Fox News. And they're calling us all racist. They're calling us Klan members. They're saying we're terrorists, we're mass murderers. We're being demonized like Jews in Nazi Germany. First they demonize you before they come and arrest you. And they're not going to give us any quarter. This is a criminal group of authoritarians. Here's another article. Sikh shooting ties into DHS veterans and terrorist narrative. We've seen that. Napolitano stands by controversial report in the Washington Times saying returning veterans are the number one terror threat and need to be disarmed and dealt with in the government training manuals. Alert, DHS rounding up veterans, throwing them in mental institutions. When Brandon Robb got out for his speech against Obama, they've now banned his Facebook today, just like ours. Continuing here from the Communist goals read in the Congressional Record in 1963. What does it say right here? Disarming the American people. That is what is most important, is to disarm us.
I'll get you guns.
Now let's shift gears to the man known as the Goblin King. I mean, I'm sorry, I went and saw The Hobbit. Great film. And it's a spitting image.
I'll get you guns, American scum.
You think my little double chin's bad? My goodness. But calling Michael Moore the Goblin King because he's a hypocrite. We're not calling him the Goblin King because he's a fraud. We're not calling him, well, I guess we are. We're not calling the Goblin King because he literally resembles the Goblin King. It's that he acts like the Goblin King. Because in Tolkien's first installment of The Hobbit, they find the dwarves and aren't going to kill them. But when they discover they've got swords, high-tech elven swords, Orcrus the Goblin Cleaver and Sting and others, they say, murderer, elf friend, and go completely crazy. And they notice the Goblin King has all his bodyguards. One of Michael Moore's bodyguards just got arrested for having his gun at a precious airport. And they get mad that they've got armaments. So he now is officially the authoritarian pig, the Goblin King, a conscious piece of trash, predatory spider of the worst authoritarian type, consciously.
I'll get your guns.
Is another article on that front. Michael Moore says, calm down, white people, and put away your guns. And he goes on to say, it's racist to own guns. I mean, he just injects that into things, saying, well, you want guns for black people. He goes, I know that's the image in your mind. Really, my image was like Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia and a big corrupt government. You know, I mean, they weren't talking about black people in 1776 when the Redcoats came to take our guns and the war started. You know, July 4th, all that stuff started when they came to take the guns. But, I mean, they just inject this to demonize gun owners. But here it is, Michael Moore's bodyguard arrested on airport gun charge. So his little goblin force, they're armed. Okay, continuing. Police investigate NBC News anchor for showing gun clip. It turns out David Gregory goes to his kids go to a private school with 11 armed guards. He says you shouldn't have any armed teachers or guards at your school, but his are, and so are Obama's. Because, see, they want to be able to have a good victim disarmament zone where they can send in their Prozac heads or others. I mean, this whole thing stinks to high heaven. And continuing, if you're on this list, you may be in grave danger. Newspapers have been publishing all over the country, but the Journal News, in states where they make you get a permit to own a gun, who you are and where you live, so criminals can come and rob you. Isn't that just nice? So again, we're racist, we're Klan, we're murderers. Here's where we live. We've got guns. Any criminals, like the guy that killed his mother with a hammer and then went and stole guns and shot the firefighters in New York? Well, if you want to know where to go steal guns, here's an address by the rich elite media trying to terrorize gun owners. But you see, folks have countered now. Politico reports blog turns tables on gun map paper. A blogger who retaliated against a New York newspaper that came under fire for identifying people with gun licenses in its circulation area explained on Thursday why he published the names and addresses of the paper's employees. And he explains they're hypocrites. Now they're freaking out that their house and where they live has been published. You see, they don't like that. They want to just terrorize gun owners and have us roll over and take it like the Goblin King. The Goblin has weapons. We're not supposed to. I think maybe he is actually a time dimensional from another dimension. Michael Moore may actually be the Goblin King.
I'll get your guns, American scum.
Some gallows humor here. The FBI will apply the term terrorism to any group it dislikes. That's another report on that front. And lastly, on this whole issue, over the last few days of the holiday, Christmas, I kept seeing articles about Israel fact checks. The NRA, yeah, Israel, their citizens don't own guns. And they even had the foreign ministry spokesman say, we don't have guns, and we don't have guns in schools. And I actually read the fine print. It was, we don't call it shootings. We call it terrorism. So they played this semantical game, and Israel rejects NRA's guns in schools claim. Even though anybody can just type in guns in Israeli schools, it's all over the news. Since the 80s, they armed the school teachers, but they think you're dumb. See, so that's Israel, Russia, China, they all want our guns. I guess I got to prove I'm pro-Israel. So Israel, I'll turn my guns in while I pay tax money to pay for your M16s for any citizen that wants one. I mean, everybody knows that. It's a fact. But they think the viewers and readers are dumb of CBS News. And I've got another one here out of the Atlantic Wire. Even Israel is fact-checking the NRA now. And what that is the Atlantic Wire and CBS preying on their viewers. They think you're idiots. They think it's funny. But here's a photo of a school teacher with kids on a field trip with a rifle right there. And again, there are just countless photos where they train five-year-olds how to use Uzis. And again, I mentioned it. There's the shooter who killed his, was it grandmother with the hammer, and then went out and stole guns. Well, I guess he's in New York. He's got a good list of who to go rob. And in the case of Connecticut, the guy got the guns illegally, too. But that doesn't matter. They say they want to take our guns. Here's some more shots of Israeli women on the streets with M16s and in the schools with their firearms right there. So that's basically it. More news coming up, then I'll come back and with part two of a special report on the Second Amendment. But we're in deep trouble, okay? This is authoritarianism. They're making their move, not just on the Second Amendment, but the First Amendment, private property, everything. We're in trouble. And if America doesn't wake up out of its coma, things are going to get real bad, because history's shown tyrants will just take over until they collapse their own system, because it's a will to power, and they've got gaggles of criminals working for them. And to get more money and power, they've got to steal more. And to do that, their instinct is dominate the population. The answer is noncompliance with the system. It's now becoming time to just not comply with anything you can. Fight everything you can in the system. Discredit the system. Speak out against it. We're going to have a special report tomorrow night on solutions. I'm Alex Jones signing off for now. Now back to InfoWars Nightly News, part two, coming up.
Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. It is Thursday, December 27th, 2012. I'm Darren McBreen. I hope you all had a wonderful holiday. We have a very special show lined up for you tonight. First, we're going to begin with two special reports by David Knight, the first dealing with the unconstitutional National Defense Authorization Act, followed by an intriguing look at the fourth turning. Then we have two back-to-back interviews with JFK assassination experts. First, the author of Dr. Mary's Monkey, Ed Haslam, joins us in studio as we talk about the link between Lee Harvey Oswald and weaponized cancer viruses. And then I talk with a real JFK insider, Judy Vary Baker. She was the girlfriend of Lee Harvey Oswald. Both of these hard-hitting books are available, by the way, at InfoWarsShop.com. Judy and I will talk about the assassination squads in Miami, Chicago, and Dallas, and then I want to get her take on E. Howard Hunt's deathbed confession. So you don't want to miss it. Stick around. It's coming up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
I'm David Knight with InfoWars Nightly News. Now, at the beginning of December, it looked like those of us who oppose indefinite detention without trial were winning some victories. First, the Feinstein-Lee Amendment reportedly blocked the indefinite detention provisions of the 2013 NDAA and was unanimously passed by the Senate. And 2 days later, the Michigan State Legislature unanimously passed their own anti-NDAA bill. But now, 2 weeks later, on December the 18th, a joint Senate and House committee stripped the Feinstein Amendment from the new NDAA bill. Let's take a look at what happened in the last 2 weeks and what it means for due process and the right to trial by jury. First, we're going to look at the proposed Senate amendments by Rand Paul and by Feinstein and Lee. Now, Paul's amendment was essentially a restating of the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution, guaranteeing due process and a right to trial by jury with two important distinctions. The word person in the Constitution is replaced with citizen. And even more troubling, it talks about those captured while doing nothing to resist the idea that we're now under martial law in the United States because of the authorization to use military force that was passed after 9/11. Well, those changes to the Sixth Amendment would have weakened our liberty. But it would have been nice to know that, for the most part, the Senate agreed with the sentiments expressed in the Constitution. But they rejected Rand Paul's amendment, and they went with one proposed by Dianne Feinstein and co-sponsored by Mike Lee. And the question is, does that new amendment, or would that new amendment, have protected our rights and liberties? We went to Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers, and we asked him for his opinion. What do you think about the recent development of the Feinstein-Lee amendment that passed in the Senate?
I think it's just empty words and smoke and mirrors. All it really says is that you can't detain American citizens unless an act of Congress expressly authorizes it. Well, the Supreme Court in the Hamdi decision in 2004 already interpreted the 2001 AUMF, the Authorization of Use of Military Force, as authorizing military detention, because military detention is part of the application of military force. And so the Feinstein Amendment does nothing. And also, in addition to that, the NDA of 2012 expressly authorizes military detention of U.S. citizens. I mean, this is all totally constitutional. The Constitution mandates very clearly in the Treason Clause of Article 3, Section 3, that any American accused of making war against his own country, whether a citizen or a lawful resident who owes allegiance to this country, any American accused of that must get a jury trial for the crime of treason. And that's the bedrock threshold we should be standing on, not arguing about whether or not Congress says it's okay. And that's all they argued about in 2004, and the Supreme Court in the Hamdi case said, well, we find that Congress did say it's okay. Well, also, Congress has no authority to authorize detention without a grand jury indictment or trial. So Congress is purporting to have a power nowhere granted in the Constitution.
Justin Amash of Michigan, congressman up there, said, at best, it's a constitutional fumble that gives powers to Congress that they didn't already have, which is what you just said. And then he said, at worst, it's a head fake. So not only did the Feinstein-Lee Amendment leave a loophole large enough that you could drive an armored personnel carrier through it, it also assumed powers to the Congress that are nowhere authorized to it by the Constitution or by the people. But as bad and as phony as the Feinstein Amendment was, the feds want to make it perfectly clear, you have no rights of due process. Once the Democrat leaders of the Senate and the Republican leaders met in committee, Carl Levin announced on December the 18th, the language of the Senate bill was dropped. Basically, I won't interpret that any further. Now, Rand Paul went on record and said, the decision by the NDAA Conference Committee, led by Senator John McCain, now renders the entire NDAA unconstitutional. Well, Stuart Rhodes, Justin Amash, and may the rest of us believe that the Feinstein bill that's now been rejected would not have protected our liberties. We disagree with Rand Paul on that. But what John McCain and the Congress have done is exactly what Obama has done from the beginning. When Obama signed the bill on New Year's Eve, he wrote, my administration will not authorize indefinite military detention without trial of American citizens. But since then, he's vigorously fought in the courts to keep that power, even getting a stay lifted. And in the same way, the Senate writes a meaningless amendment to get the mainstream media to assure people and put them back to sleep, and then throws even that out.
Shut up.
Your time is expired.
Get a lawyer.
In your face. That's right. Both parties want to tear down our time-honored legal system and put up something that looks more like the Soviet Union or the People's Republic of China. Look at the difference between a courtroom and a combatant status review tribunal room. There's no room for a jury or witness there.
It's not the constitutional remedy. You're supposed to get a jury of your peers, and that is what the founders fought for. And this is one of the conflicting of arms. The American Revolution was denial of jury trial.
It's a very powerful thing when you've got your jury of your peers judging not just the facts, but whether or not they agree with the law. But people in America have had that taken away from them for so long, they don't really realize what they've given up.
they don't know what they have. I mean, it's kind of normalcy bias. They don't understand what they're losing because they're ignorant of their own history and their own heritage. And so, but there is, the organizations like FIJA, the Fully Informed Jury Association, are certainly correcting that ignorance. And this is why I believe the elites want all the more to get rid of jury trial. And this is their most effective way to do it, is to say, well, this is not a criminal system. This is a law of war system we're now dealing with. And they just sidestep the entire Bill of Rights.
The NDAA is an attempt to put the last nail in the coffin of jury trial and jury nullification. And the question is, can we stop it with state nullification?
We have on the phone Representative Tom McMillan from Rochester, Michigan. Now, Representative McMillan introduced in the Michigan House a bill that passed unanimously, 107-0.
In the hearing that I had on my bill, I chair the committee it went through, and Justin Amash and the ACLU were sitting next to each other, and I, you know, it's got left and right, you know, people who really care about liberty are coming together on this.
Yeah. It shouldn't be a left-right issue. I mean, there shouldn't be any party that's against liberty and due process.
Every legislature should be standing up for their citizens in every state. But, you know, we've got to hit this thing head on before it just keeps expanding and eventually is used.
People like Representative McMillan in Michigan are fighting, as well as a bill in the Texas state legislature that's coming up next year, which would not only block indefinite detention and the military used as a police force, the Texas bill would interpose a state to protect the rights of its citizens. And for those on the left who are rightly concerned about our constitutional processes and our right to trial by jury, I would ask them, do you really want to support gun control? Do you really want to lose the Second Amendment to those who have such contempt for our basic legal freedoms? I'm David Knight with InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight with the Nightly News. Now, this quote was written 9 years before the financial crisis of 2008. But it came from a book that was written in 1990, had the same ideas from the same authors, 18 years before the financial crisis. The fourth turning is due to begin shortly after the new millennium, midway through the 00 decade. About the year 2005, a sudden spark will catalyze a crisis mood. Remnants of the old social order will disintegrate. Political and economic trust will implode. Real hardship will beset the land with severe distress that could involve questions of class, race, nation, and empire. The very survival of the nation will feel at stake. Sometime before the year 2025, America will pass through a great gate in history, commensurate with the American Revolution, Civil War, and twin emergencies of the Great Depression and World War II. The basis of this prediction is a cyclical view of history that Strauss and Howe discovered by going back through American and English history back to the mid-1400s. And they discovered that just as we have seasons of weather, we have seasons of society. And just as we don't know the exact date that winter is going to come, or whether it's going to be a harsh or a mild winter, we do know that it's going to follow fall, and we do know the approximate time that it's going to come.
We take a close look at the rhythms of American history, and in our book we make the following big prediction, that beginning about 10 years from now, America is due to enter an era of crisis, an era of political and social upheaval that will last around 20 years or so until the late 2020s. We call this era a fourth turning, and we think it's going to be a big threshold for the history of our nation. It's going to be something on par with World War II and the Great Depression, or going back the length of a human lifespan before then, the Civil War, or going back the length of another human lifespan, the American Revolution. It could be a time of tragedy or a time of great opportunity.
What they found was that societies will go through four phases of high, awakening, unraveling, and crisis. Humans go through four phases of life: childhood, young adult, midlife, and elderhood. And they notice generations where people have shared experiences and attitudes are spaced about 20 years apart. And generations are shaped by where their childhood falls within the phases of society. Now, this got my attention because I noticed that there was a repeating pattern of about 72 years between significant dates in American history as well as some other histories. For example, if you go from the time the U.S. Constitution was written in 1789 to the beginning of the Civil War, 1861, that's 72 years. Another 72 years takes us to 1933, the beginning of the New Deal, another major transformation of American society. If you go another 72 years, that took us to about 2005, exactly where Strauss and Howe had predicted a major crisis and change would occur. And in addition, if you look at the Russian Revolution, from 1917 to 1989 was about 72 years. So it seemed to fit with the life cycle of humans. In a cycle, four generations, 20 years apart, are shaped by when their childhood falls within that cycle. And the names they use in their book, The Fourth Turning, come from the biblical account of Exodus. For example, you have one generation as a prophet generation. Now think of Moses calling a generation to change, the next generation, the nomad generation, wandering in the wilderness, a period of crisis and restlessness. The following generation would be a hero generation. Think of the Joshua generation taking a promised land. That often involves a major war. And then finally, an artist generation, the generation that builds a new society. Well, where does Strauss and Howe think that we are in this cycle? The researchers see the millennial generation, those born between 1982 to 2004, as the hero generation. And they see our society entering a fourth turning, a crisis period where society will be fundamentally transformed as it was with the American Revolution, the Civil War, or the New Deal. And the last time we faced a fourth turning was the Great Depression and World War II. Strauss and Howe's predictions of 22 years ago now look prescient. And we can see the storm surge coming in our society at our time, just as if a hurricane was approaching the shore. Now, our government has been undermining the foundations of liberty for a long time. And the question is, will you be a sandbag to help hold up and protect liberty, or will you stand by as it gets swept away and we enter a new dark age of authoritarianism? I'm David Knight for the InfoWars Nightly News.
And now, a special Christmas message from the Federal Reserve. This Christmas, the Federal Reserve would like to wish all of our slaves a very merry quantitative easing four. Our current chair, Ben Bernanke, has perfected the art of giving money to foreign banks for many years, as seen in this rare home movie. Ben is currently giving these banks $85 billion per month. Excellent work, Ben. Once again, this is the Federal Reserve wishing you and yours a very merry quantitative easing four, and we hope to destroy your economy in the new year.
I really enjoy it when the globalists try to poison us, and, we resist them via a free market system. Hello, my fellow info warriors. Alex Jones here, introducing you to the ProPure family of gravity-fed filters. Now, you know that the globalists are filling our water with radioactive isotopes, fluoride, lead, mercury, arsenic. And one of the few systems that can efficiently and economically remove or reduce down to non-detectable levels these poisons are gravity-fed filters. And ProPure is the top of the line. Their filters are impregnated with silver, a natural antibiotic. On top of that, they're bigger, so they filter faster. You don't have to prime these the first time you use them. It's amazing. Go to InfoWars.com and click on the shopping cart link to see the entire family of these babies. Now, the fluoride they add to our water is so tiny that most filters can't cut it out. But ProPure has their system that will, again, reduce it to non-detectable levels, almost get all of it out of there. That's also available. And if you look at the different systems they offer, the ProPure Big Brush Finish is on a stand, so it's easier on a table or at your restaurant or wherever you have it to go up with a glass or a mug and fill it up. Then there's this big baby right here, the ProPure King Large Version. Got a lot of different options that come with it. Also, they have the ProPure Big, probably one of the best values out there. And of course, it's burnished stainless steel. And then what I use on my RV, something that's great for your hunting cabin or the back porch, is the ProPure Traveler. Small and portable, but packs a huge punch, cleans out all that garbage. They also have a glass sight spigot, so you don't have to take the top off and look in the bottom area to see how much water. You can see how fast it's filtering with this optional system. The globalists obviously are hitting us through our water. It's time to take control of our lives. It's time to not give our children and families these poisons. And these systems cut it down to non-detectable levels across the board. ProPure is the name. I only promote what I believe in. And I use ProPure in my home and my office. And I recommend that you check out the information on ProPure at InfoWars.com. We already have the lowest price at InfoWars.com on the ProPure gravity filter system. But when you add in the 10% off when InfoWarriors use the product code WATER at InfoWars.com, nobody can top it. So again, it's a win-win-win. Stop drinking the poison water, checkmate the globalists when it comes to your health, and support InfoWars.com and the work we're doing here. You know, many revolutionaries rob banks and things and kidnap people for funds. We promote in the free market the products we use that are about preparedness. That's how we fund this revolution against the New World Order. In our move to restore our constitutional republic and a spirit of 1776 worldwide. Check it out at InfoWars.com. ProPure. Top of the line, number one, most powerful and effective and economical gravity-fed water system in the world. ProPure, available, discounted at InfoWars.com. Don't forget product code WATER to save 10%. It's the latest generation, years in development. ProPure is the name.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals, but the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com, sign up as a distributor, and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us. This is the InfoWars Nightly News. Once again, I'm your host, Darren McBreen. And coming up next, we're going to take a look at an interview I had just a couple of months ago with Ed Haslam. He is the author of Dr. Mary's Monkey, How the Unsolved Murder of a Doctor, a Secret Laboratory in New Orleans, and Cancer-Causing Monkey Viruses are Linked to Lee Harvey Oswald, the JFK Assassination, and Emerging Global Epidemics. Now, this was an in-studio interview that we're about to premiere for the first time right here on our program, and it sheds light on a fascinating angle of the JFK assassination that links accused patsy Lee Harvey Oswald with covert cancer research conducted by the CIA in an attempt to basically weaponize the disease and kill Fidel Castro. At least that's their excuse for the dangerous and careless program that they conducted. Now, all of this takes place behind the scenes in New Orleans in the early 1960s. There's a cast of characters that includes, well, Oswald's mistress, Judy Vary Baker, co-conspirator David Ferry, who first met Oswald in the Civil Air Patrol, and Dr. Mary Sherman. She is the physician, or was the physician, at the Ochsner Clinic, who was murdered in 1964 in a hidden laboratory in New Orleans. And I also want to mention an important reference video that coincides with the interview that you're about to see. Alex Jones originally interviewed Ed Haslam on the radio show, and much of what is not covered in this segment, well, it can be seen on the Alex Jones radio show interview. Just search for the title, Weaponized Cancer Viruses Exposed, and I guess you can call it part one of a two-part interview with the author. Did inoculating millions of trusted school children with polio vaccines contaminated by monkey viruses trigger an epidemic of soft tissue cancers? Now, what you're about to learn is that what happened back in the early 1960s affects our world tremendously today. An interview with Ed Haslam on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, the first point is the book is ultimately a cold case investigation into the murder of Dr. Mary Sherman. Yeah. And that's what my initial focus was, and I really had no intention of going into the JFK thing. I, in fact, would have preferred to stay away from it, but that's where the story leads. The homicide report, the precinct report, the autopsy report, and all of the newspaper articles for the next 2 weeks involving it. Okay, so that is the core set of documents that I present in this book. And when we analyze those documents, you'll see what's wrong with the picture of Mary Sherman's murder. The Metropolitan Crime Commission is very interestingly connected to this because the guy that was Judy's boss in this Me and Lee book, he becomes the executive director of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. And the Metropolitan Crime Commission is a faux government. It's got an official-sounding name, right? Like something out of Batman, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's actually a private organization that gives themselves some sort of stature in the community by worrying about crime. And turns out that Alton Ochsner, who is a major character in my book, he had been president of the American Cancer Society and mm-hmm. sat on the board with CIA founder Wild Bill Donovan. And he is the guy that orchestrates the television and radio coverage of Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. I mean, Ochsner's a big player, and he's the one that brings Judy into New Orleans for this bioweapons program. And he's on the board of the Metropolitan Crime Commission.
What about his connections to David Ferry? What, do we have proof that, you know, Ochsner and Ferry work together?
Well, we do have Judy's statement, okay?
Okay.
Now, she is brought to New Orleans at the invitation of Ochsner. When she gets there, Ochsner's out of town. Mm-hmm. They send in an ex-Marine to get a hold of her because she's there early and they don't want a loose cannon around the deck. And this ex-Marine is Lee Oswald. Within 24 hours, Lee Oswald introduces her to David Ferry. And when it comes time to, and Lee takes Judy over to Ferry's apartment. And when it's time for Judy to meet with Ochsner when he's back in town, it is Lee that sets up the meeting.
Sure.
So Lee Oswald is in the middle of this whole thing as a coordinator and a logistical support person. I mean, for example, at one point, Judy needs some more fetal calf serum for her cancer experiments. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't want her going over to the medical supply place getting that. They send Lee over. And so Lee is running equipment and supplies and people around this string of laboratories that's set up in uptown New Orleans.
Now, did he, it's my guess that Lee pretended to meet her on accident, but he was probably sent to meet her because the story is that she dropped a book outside of the post office and he was kind enough to bend down and pick it up and they engaged a conversation. They went on for a nice leisurely walk, you know, in New Orleans.
And he charmed her with his intelligent conversation
exactly.
And all that.
Just by coincidence.
Well, I don't think there's any chance that it was accidental.
Sure.
I mean, because if it's accidental, you have to explain how he winds up introducing her to David Ferry in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then in another 24 hours, there's a party at David Ferry's apartment at which Mary Sherman attends. Mm-hmm. And then he coordinates the whole thing with Ochsner, and it's Ochsner that's brought her in there in the first place. Yeah. I mean, if that's an accident, you know, I got some swampland I want to talk to you about.
Jim, why are these books, Dr. Mary's Monkey and Me and Lee, so important?
Oh, well, that's an easy one, Alex. Number one, once you understand about the adulteration of the polio vaccine back in the 50s, then you'll begin to understand why there's been such an upsurge in the cancer rate. So this is a story that affects millions of people. I mean, this actually impacts the public. All right, not some celebrity news that who cares except the people involved. And the second thing is, it also rips open the incredible, tangled, and darkly woven tapestry behind the Kennedy assassination, and shows you the interconnections between CIA and FBI intelligence agencies, the military, secret laboratory, secret biochemical warfare testing, the war against Castro, and what role Lee Harvey Oswald played in all this. He was not just some lone schnook off the street. And if you'll read Ed's two books, Dr. Mary's Monkey and Me and Lee, you will find out not only what Lee Harvey Oswald was actually up to when he was in New Orleans in the summer of 1963, but how he connects into this matrix of powerful and violent groups that were behind the Kennedy assassination.
The first thing to realize is where New Orleans is. I mean, New Orleans is at the mouth of the Mississippi River, and trade is the major business. So trade with Latin America is the major component of that. And so in the 50s, there was a lot of trade with Cuba. Okay, so the moment the embargo happens, New Orleans loses 25% of its business. And then Castro and Che are talking about taking the revolution to South America. Well, if they do that, there go the coffee beans and there go the bananas, mm-hmm. Okay? So there's a lot of economic pressure. And Ochsner's in the middle of this. I mean, if you look at Ochsner's hospital, he's got all these flagpoles out front, and there's Guatemala, Honduras, you know. He's got the whole thing down to Argentina, yeah. Okay? Because the business model, the premise of his entire hospital is he's going to supply medical services to the oligarchy of Latin America. Okay, well, if you overthrow the oligarchy, there goes his business. Okay, so all these people in New Orleans, from the coffee barons to the banana people to the medical people, all have a common economic interest, which Castro is threatening. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's sort of the first point. The second point is in 1962, October of 1962, we have the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, actually, those missiles were in there earlier, but it wasn't a public issue until 62, all right? And in 62, we're sitting there in New Orleans looking at this big circle, and there's New Orleans, and here are the missiles, and it's 40 minutes away from us, okay? And so, you know, we're wondering, you know, if we're going to die before dinner, you know, I mean, basically, there. And New Orleans took this threat of Soviet missiles very personally. And because we were the ones that were visualizing our city in flames, okay? Mm-hmm. And so it was at that point in time that they took a project that they had previously been doing and turned it into a bioweapon project, okay? Now, this other project starts with the contamination of the polio vaccine in the 1950s. And what happens is, after they release 100 million doses of the polio vaccine, which has been grown on monkey kidney cells, mm-hmm. they realize that one of the dozens of monkey viruses that they knew were in the vaccine actually causes cancer. So this is like the biggest mistake in history. I mean, they have mass inoculated the American population, particularly the children, with a cancer-causing virus. And therefore, the logical conclusion of that is we have a epidemic of cancer on the horizon.
This is absolute fact. And the magnitude of it in suffering, if you've ever watched a family member, you know, wheezing and battling for breath in their deathbed, dying of cancer, and you know that depending on the cancers, they're up thousands of percentile.
and the government tries to cook the numbers, keep it quiet, kind of like unemployment numbers, it's exponential. The United States leads the world in illness, in cancer.
What we see is a massive eruption of soft tissue cancers happens right after the polio vaccine. But in the real-time experience of it from the players involved, they realized this in 1958. And they stamp it secret because they don't want to be held accountable for it. And then they get really busy trying to make a vaccine. And in the polio vaccine, they had three flavors of polio to work with. I'll call them heavy, medium, and light. Okay. Right. In this SV40, which is the cancer-causing monkey viruses, they have one flavor, and it's heavy, okay? And what they want to do is try to get this thing to mutate into a benign form that they can, or a less strong form that they can use as a vaccine, hopefully to prevent the epidemic of cancer. And this is like a... Nobody wants to admit they're doing this research because they don't want to explain why they're doing the research. Mm-hmm. Okay? So this is set up as a medical Manhattan project.
The world will never know the true facts of what occurred, my motives. The people had so much to gain and had such a material motive for putting me in a position I'm in. We'll never let the true facts come of their boards to the world.
Now, these people are in very high positions,
yes.
Okay, it's also been claimed that Jack Ruby died of cancer. You want to get into that a little bit?
Well, that claim was made very early in 1967, shortly after Ruby died. Mm-hmm. And what we now know is several things that are really important about that. First of all, the biological weapon that Judy and Lee were working on took 28 days to work. Okay.
Okay. And which was about the time it took him to develop cancer and die.
That's right. It was 28 days from the day Jack Ruby was diagnosed with cancer to the day he died. Okay, so that's point one. We got a time match there. Mm-hmm. Secondly, Jack Ruby passed a note to his guard that said, they have injected me with cancer. Okay, so we had Jack Ruby saying it. All right. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, turns out that Jack Ruby is part of the money financing for this bioweapons lab, and he's bagmanning money from Dallas down to New Orleans for this project, and they explain the whole project to him. All right, so he's there in David Ferry's apartment with Judy and Lee, so he knows that they have a biological weapon capable of killing people in this manner. Then there's a very fine Chinese-American doctor who was taking care of Jack Ruby, and then one day they told him his services were no longer available. The last time he saw Jack Ruby, he was fine, okay? And then about 6 weeks later, Jack Ruby's dead, okay? Marduk is his name, M-A-R-D-U-C-K. They then bring in somebody from, quote, out of town who actually has no real credentials except as a psychiatrist, but he's got a lot of contacts with the CIA. And it is him, his name is Jolly West, or sometimes called Jolly West, who is suspected of being the person who actually injects Jack Ruby with the cancer weapon. And what's really interesting to me, I was discussing this with Jim Mars on the phone one night, and Jim said that when he was teaching his course on JFK, he had somebody come and take the course who actually operated an electron microscope and had examined the cancer cells from Jack Ruby. And there's sort of this type of cell and that type of cell, and they are never together. And he found, because they come from different organs in the body, and he found both of these cells in Jack Ruby's tumor, suggesting that it's all was mixed up in a cancer cocktail, just like they were doing.
Sure.
And part of that is the lung cancer cells were found in his liver or whatever it was, you know. And so there is, from a real scientific forensic point of view, there is evidence that says Ruby was probably killed with cancer. And, of course, the timing of it was perfect because he couldn't talk. Sure. So that says the one of the uses of the biological weapon is to dispose of witnesses while they're awaiting trial in jail.
Well, I noticed in the book, Me and Lee, that you referenced Oswald's time cards. Now, can you tell us about the significance of all that?
Okay. Well, one of the things that is very conspicuous about the Warren Commission volumes is they included all kind of information that didn't have anything to do with the real issue, like the dental records of Jack Ruby's mother is the great example on that.
That was fascinating reading. Just kidding.
But one of the things they did not include was the time cards, Lee Harvey Oswald's time cards from the Riley Coffee Company. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a pretty conspicuous omission. And when the JFK Records Act came through and we got into the deeper files, we found that the FBI had collected those from the Riley Coffee Company and had turned them over to the Warren Commission. So someone in the Warren Commission said, we don't want these things in the Warren Commission volumes, even though we have them as evidence. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is when you read the Warren Commission, they interview Oswald's supervisor. And he says, oh, he was this horrible employee. I could never find him. He was off campus when he's clocked in and all this stuff. I mean, you read that and you say, okay, you're his supervisor. Why were you approving his time cards?
Sure.
If you thought he was cheating the company, okay? Well, the point is, the supervisor was not approving his time cards. The person that was responsible for approving Lee Oswald's time cards was William Moynihan, who was Judy's boss. And when he wasn't around, Judy signed for him.
So she actually signed Lee Harvey Oswald's time cards on occasion.
Right, and her initials are on there, and we compare these initials on the time cards with other documents like her college ID and things that she wrote at the time, and you can see it's her initials.
So that's why. So if that were to be allowed in the Warren Commission...
The logical question any investigator would have asked is whose initials is that?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what they didn't want to do. They didn't want to get into who is Judy Vary Baker and why was she in New Orleans, because that leads you to the underground medical laboratory and the biological weapon.
Wow. You know, when Ed Haslam began to investigate the cold case file on Dr. Mary Sherman, he never imagined that it would connect some of the most prominent people in New Orleans to Lee Harvey Oswald or the Mafia or the dark forces deep within the United States government. But that's exactly where this investigation leads, and then some. After all, this book is not just about the murder of John F. Kennedy. The story ultimately leads to something that affects all of us, and that is the cancer epidemic. And just like historian and investigative journalist Jim Mars noted in the video you just watched, this book will change your whole perspective on what really went down in Dallas and the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. I guess you can say that Dr. Mary's monkey is the missing link in the JFK assassination. Let's talk about the night before the assassination. Murchison hosted a high-level gathering at his house in Dallas. Lots of people. Tell us about the people that were there and what.
Wait a minute. I can tell you something that's more personal because, of course, someone else reported that. Lee told me about a meeting where they said they were going to make a trophy film that was held at Turtle Creek the day before that. You know, that high-level meeting that LBJ's mistress was talking about, they really were announcing what they were going to do, but the plans to decide to actually go ahead in Dallas apparently were made on Wednesday night, the night before. And we have meetings also going on even in New Orleans at that time. And a lot of correlation going on. So
now, were some of the people that were at the Murchison house the night before, were some of the same people? Because we have the night before, we have H.L. Hunt, yes. J. Edgar Hoover was there, Nixon was there, LBJ was there, Clyde Tolson, John McCloy was there.
From what Lee described some of this, because he said there had been a meeting. I think after all, when we spoke, it was quite late on Wednesday, and it was going into Thursday, only 37 and a half hours before the assassination. And Lee is telling me about, I did not hear the name Hunt. Not that Hunt. The CIA's Hunt is the name that that I suspect I had heard. I say that because he gave me a number of names. The ones that he told me to remember are the ones that I kept close to me, and that was, of course, Bobby Baker and Billy Celestis. He said not that they were involved, but because of them, there was a go-ahead to go ahead and get kill Kennedy in Dallas, and this apparently had been in the works for some time.
And that's because of the Bobby Baker and the Billy Celestis scandals that were going
on. An enormous scandal. Mm-hmm. That would have put you have Lyndon Johnson deciding whether he wants to go to prison or become the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah, because, I mean, he was probably even going to get dropped from the reelection. He might have even been dropped from vice presidency because these scandals were heating up to the point where it looked like that's the only way he was going to save his ass from going to prison. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you had actually the meeting where they were showing that suitcases full of money were being brought in, you know, as bribes. That meeting was held, the Congressional Investigation Committee looking into this corruption, was held the same day Kennedy was shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, and by the way, one of the first things that Lyndon Johnson did, he said, he called his broker right after the assassination. He's not saying, oh, poor Kennedy. He's saying, sell that goddamn Halliburton stock that my wife's got. He wants to start the Vietnam War. You can't have that connection, you know.
True.
The point is that I'd like to get across is that Lee Oswald was grieved by what he was hearing. He pretended he was invited into this ring. When I told Jim Mars about in 1999 that Lee, he intimated that he had saved Kennedy's life 3 weeks earlier, several weeks earlier, the way he put it. And I said, you mean you saved Kennedy? And he said, I believe I did. Now, when I said that in 1999, it was extremely hard for anybody to believe that in 2000, in the mid-2000s, 2007 or so, we have Abraham Bolden. And he came out, he was a Secret Service agent, and he said that Kennedy's life indeed was saved in Chicago. They arrested armed gunmen there, and you find that Kennedy was, his trip there was called off at the last moment. You can find the more details in JFK and the Unspeakable, that wonderful book by James Douglas showing treasonous activities by Kennedy's own generals and so on, and much motive for killing Kennedy and blaming it on the innocent Oswald.
Also, and these
Bolden
were what
the that Lee Oswald, he didn't say Oswald, he said the man's name who uncovered this plot and informed the CIA, the FBI there, so they arrested these men. His name was Lee.
Yeah, and he said that's the informant that told him about it. Yeah, because I think it's fascinating. In fact, I'm holding The Echo from Daily Plaza. This is a book by Abraham Bolden, and he was one of the Secret Service agents.
We hope that we'll be speaking together in Chicago.
Oh, that'd be a fascinating conversation. And the thing is, you know, he was a Secret Service agent, and they were starting to hear rumors of an assassination squad.
Yes, sir.
And then it sounds like maybe Lee Harvey Oswald may have tipped him off, and then that the group was put under surveillance, but the CIA blew their cover when I guess there was an intercom or a radio or something that one of the guys that they were surveilling overheard this. They blew their cover. Yeah, they heard a radio or something.
If we think this is an accident,
Yeah.
Right.
But that's the thing, is when they finally pulled this guy over, they did arrest somebody, and one of the suspects one of them was an ex-Marine with ties to anti-Castro Cubans. And,
sort of patsy setup.
You know, yeah. His name was Thomas Arthur Valley. Yeah, but
here's another thing that a lot of people may not know. When Jim Mars first interviewed me, and Jim is on top of everything, I want to tell you. And this wonderful investigator, this researcher, did some wonderful things because he actually started working with me and looking at all my evidence, and he was just astonished. And then as he was looking at all this, and we're talking about hours and hours and hours, all of a sudden I said, well, you know, Lee told me that he was a member of an abort team. And Jim just about fell off his chair. He said, what? He said, you know, that's not in any of the literature. It's just not there. He had just recently interviewed Tosh Plumlee, a CIA pilot, and apparently others. This board team existed. Nobody knew about it, and here I'm telling him about it. Something else, too, I'd like to tell you. In 2003, you hear me speaking about the Kennedy assassination. Lee called it the big event, and so I call it the big event there in 2003. Well, we don't hear St. John, you know, we have
it was the deathbed confession, and that's exactly what Howard Hunt was saying, the big event.
He calls it the big event, and yeah, I called it that in 2003.
Spurge and Morales and people of that ilk stayed in apartment houses during preparations for the big event. Their addresses were very subject to change. So that where a fellow like Morales had been one day, you're not necessarily associated with that same address the following day. In short, it was a very mobile experience. Let me point out at this point that if I had wanted to fictionalize what went on in Miami and elsewhere during the run-up for the big event, I would have done so, but I don't want any unreality to tinge this particular story, or the information, I should say. I was a bench warmer on it, and I had a reputation for honesty. I think it's essential to refocus on what this information that I've been providing you, and you alone, by the way, consists of. What is important in the story is that we've backtracked the chain of command up through Kornmeyer and laying the doings at the doorstep of LBJ. He, in my opinion, had an almost maniacal urge to become president. He regarded JFK as he was, in fact, an obstacle to achieving that. He could have waited for JFK to finish out his term and then undoubtedly a second term. So that would have put LBJ at the head of a long list of people who were waiting.
Well, see, these are the things that, you know, because I'll be honest, I was very skeptical when I first heard about your book. And, for sure. And then I started reading it. And then these are the types of things that just kept, as they kept pouring in, they made more and more sense. The more these dots that were connected, certainly seems more and more believable. I'm curious, is after JFK gets shot, you must have been horrified when you witnessed Lee Harvey Oswald being shot right there on television.
It was awful.
I can imagine. And not only that, but the years to follow when you know a different Lee Harvey Oswald than the rest of the world knows, but his family was disgraced, you know, his friends, neighbors, everybody thinks he's just this monster, and you know better. Yeah.
We've seen some internet polls. The people who are, you know, the internet has made things different. I've been able to speak out on the internet, and that we're doing polls, and we're finding now that 5% of the people we're polling, and of course they're on Facebook and everything, they're now not only not saying that Lee Oswald was just a patsy and was not involved, they're saying he tried to save the president. You see, more and more people are understanding exactly how these dots are linked together. If you go to Amazon.com, of course, you can get the book at meandlee.com, but at Amazon, you're going to find 72 out of 82 reviews. 72 are five-star reviews, and they're all over and over. They say, finally, the dots are connected. Finally, we understand what Lee was about. And that's what I want to convey. This was an innocent man, and I'm sick of what's happened to our government. I'm sick of the wars and the corruption that's occurred. We had a really great country. Lee Oswald died for that country.
Yeah, I was going to say, not only that, he's a patriotic American and a hero.
Yes, sir.
And
God bless you, yes.
Now, what about this? Do you have any idea what happened in the days before the assassination? I understand that Lee went to try to communicate with the FBI.
And, yes, he did.
Yeah, what happened there?
Well, we know that I'm convinced, since Lee told me, he said, I believe I saved Kennedy's life, you know, and Kennedy lives three more weeks, you know. He said he was going to try to do the same thing in Dallas. He didn't know how he would be able to do so because they had sort of caught him. I mean, in other words, by informing the FBI at least once, that's probably saved Kennedy's life. Originally, I thought that had to be Miami because Kennedy came in there by helicopter, you know, instead of motorcade. I didn't know which city. Lee Oswald was not a man to brag. He would never exaggerate or anything like that. He was a man of few words unless you could get him really going, and sometimes he'd get passionate. Well, anyway, Lee gave me so much information, and so I'm convinced that he could put on a different persona. He really believed in the beginning that when he was apparently penetrating these rings, and it started in New Orleans. The whole thing started there because you have this mafia connection, and the CIA and the FBI, they're cooperating with many, many other interests. And some of these, of course, like the World Bank. You have McCloy, after all, a member of the Warren Commission. He's former president of the World Bank. Kennedy was, as you know, printing real money.
That's right.
So you have so many reasons why people would cover this up. Lee said, I'm a dead man. And I said, please, Lee, get out of there. You know, run. Leave. And he said, if he did, two things would happen. One, we'd all be killed, and they'd catch him, and they'd kill him anyway. And he said, if I stay, that will be one less bullet aimed at Kennedy. Because if he would have left, they would have put someone in there willing to shoot Kennedy anyway.
When did you start fearing for your life? I mean, I would imagine right away, but then you're starting to see people that you know and that are affiliated with the JFK assassination in any way.
They
start
after
disappearing.
The other.
Yeah.
Yes, one after the other. I was so fortunate that I was, see, Dave called me Jay, and Jay could be J-A-Y, like a guy's name, you know. People didn't know that Dave Ferry had anything to do with females, and that helped me a lot. Also, my name is Jay Ferry. And it's close to Dave Ferry, if you're not listening carefully. So you have these similarities. But then I was Mrs. Robert Ellison Baker III in Florida. I did not go to my sister's wedding because I didn't want the word, I didn't want to be associated with the word Ferry. Ferry is a very, uncommon name. I didn't go to my own grandpa's funeral. I loved him dearly. I didn't go. I mean, I stayed out of the papers as much as I could.
Well, you also gave up on your passion.
Everything.
I mean, this was your God-given talent was to do what you were doing with medical research.
I wanted to cure cancer to this day. In fact, sometimes I'm offered, there is hope that I might be able to help guide some laboratory research and bacteriophage research. That's what I'm interested in. Looking for virus cures for cancer.
Oh, I would love to see you get back into the profession and do what you
do. I'm able to do it. To this day, I'm able to do it.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, I really want to stress this, is that people are, as they learn about the cancer industry, we realize that we could have cured cancer a long time ago. It wasn't profitable. Imagine if we cure cancer, we're going to have whole hospitals go down. Okay, because if you do it with a vaccine, you're going to get an injection. You're not going to get cancer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have millions of people out of work. Insurance companies are going to lose all that money. Pharmaceutical companies are going to lose all that chemotherapy income, you know, from all as long as you are burning cancer, poisoning cancer, and cutting cancer out, you are back there in the medieval ages, okay? We're in the Middle Ages.
Absolutely. And now they're giving us cancer through the vaccinations and flu shots and all that sort of thing. So they're
you can count on it. And that's the sad part. And yes, I've had my life threatened. I want to tell you, I've been in the hospital 7 times between 1999 and 2007. I was forced overseas. I've been out of a wheelchair twice. I can't see very well anymore. I've had 4 concussions. These people they don't play games. You know, they're serious. The problem is that they have to make it look like it's an accident, and I've bounced back. Geico sure doesn't like me because they've had to pay for all these so-called accidents, you know. And here's the problem. If I stayed silent, and that's what I was going to do, I wrote a book and I was going to give it to my son and take it to my grave. I just couldn't do it. When I saw, despite the huge amount of evidence that Lee Oswald was an innocent man, every year they're coming out with these stupid specials, you know, he did it. I've told others, but I think it's very important to stress something. You can't trust what you see in the 26 volumes. And, for example, Hoover said, do we have enough time? Can I?
No, I know what you're getting into. Absolutely. Yeah. What Hoover said as soon as JFK was assassinated, he said Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin. Look no further. Look no further.
Before they even got the evidence from into the labs.
Yeah.
But he also said that Lee was a homosexual. The humiliation they put him through, the way he was handled, it's outrageous.
And none of his testimony, none of his interrogation was recorded.
Of course not.
Yeah. The most.
And he could not say, this is important, he could not say, hey, look, I was working for the CIA, I was working for the FBI, I was trying to say, we would have all been killed, but imagine all the contacts that he had over 2.5 years in Russia, in the USSR. There were CIA over there, there were informants, they would have executed them. This is the height of the Cold War. You know, these people knew that Lee would not betray us.
Did you know anything about Sparky Rubenstein?
Sure. I met him personally.
Yeah.
And in fact, I met a number of these people personally. And often they say, this was what he did was a spontaneous act because his dog was left in the car, Sheba. What they don't tell you is that, and you'll see it by the way, Oliver Stone has a very good film there with JFK. It shows Sparky Rubenstein, that is Jack Ruby, walking with his two dogs, Sheba and her mate, under his arms. You can see it in a clip from the movie. Now, you only have one dog in the car. Dave Ferry talked to me after the assassination. He told me I had to keep my head down, be a vanilla girl. And by the way, because I objected to using prisoners who were uninformed that they were being injected with cancerous material that could kill them, I was kicked out of the project. And that's why it probably saved my life, because I had to go back to Florida. By then, Lee and I were in love, and we were trying to figure out a way to get back together. Lee left his wedding ring behind, you know, the day of the assassination. But he was wearing his Marine ring. It says, always faithful, semper fi. Now, there's one dog in Jack Ruby's car, Sheba, just one. Jack Ruby's other dog is not there. And what Dave Ferry told me is that they had kidnapped the other dog, okay? Because he got information, underground information, that you're never going to hear from the FBI, okay? They kidnapped the dog, and Dave Ferry said that they were going to chop the dog and torture to, you know, torture to death. And that whatever they did to the dog, they would next do to his sister Eva, and then they would go after him, that they'd cut all his fingers and toes off, and you know, joint by joint, they'd disjoint him and cut him to pieces, just whatever they did to the dog. So when you see this one dog in the car there, that shows you that just a hint of the pressure that Jack Ruby was under. He was so relieved when they found out, when he was told that Lee Oswald had been murdered and had died, you know, after what he did.
Last Friday, Infowars.com posted a petition to WhiteHouse.gov calling for British-born propagandists, Piers Morgan, to be deported to the UK.
And this was done really in a tongue-in-cheek way to illustrate that he's trying to get rid of our Second Amendment right to self-defense, and so he doesn't have any First Amendment right. Because, in truth, foreigners, and he is not a U.S. citizen, can be deported for seditious activity or subversion. And we presented those Supreme Court cases, and the Wall Street Journal concurred with us over the weekend. But it was amazing to see literally thousands of publications, from the New York Times to the London Guardian, saying, how dare you be against his free speech? We knew you would do that. That was the whole point. We said that in our article about the petition on Friday, that it was there to illustrate that we have a bunch of foreign globalists here trying to take our Second Amendment. How would you like to lose your first? Okay? That's the issue that we're dealing with here. Now, I've got to say this. I think of all the different news reports we've put out that have gone viral, this is probably the biggest. There are tens of thousands of news articles out there about the petition nearing 100,000. And the fact that the White House, by the way, does not respond to the petitions for secession or petitions to have the U.S. government not fund al-Qaeda. They pick and choose the petitions that they want to give attention to. Within a few days, they've used the anti-gun petition saying, you want us to take the guns, we will. So the petition itself is a fraud, but it can still be used as a tool to illustrate the absurdity and fraud of all these foreigners over here lecturing us, because the globalists want to break our will. They want to train us that, you know, the TSA can stick their hands down our pants, the NSA can spy on us without warrants, the police can set up warrantless checkpoints on the highway, and all these foreigners and synthetic citizens like Fareed Zakaria can sit there and lecture us about our founding Second Amendment being something that needs to be removed. Now, separately on this issue, they've always argued, hey, we don't want your guns, we just want you to turn them in, basically. Now they've introduced the legislation that would basically end the Second Amendment as we know it. And I covered that in an earlier video tonight here on InfoWars Nightly News. But it should also be pointed out the petitions have been started in the UK where British citizens are saying, please don't send Piers Morgan back. We already basically ran him out of the country. And many of his colleagues in News Corps have gone to jail or are in trial right now for all sorts of different crimes. And so Piers Morgan literally has fled here to the United States and is now acting as an anti-Second Amendment mercenary. There's a whole other layer to all of this. I personally have been on CNN many times, Fox News many times, and really don't get much of a response. So I'm not crying over the fact that out of thousands and thousands and thousands of news articles a day in the last week since this story broke, we have been given credit for originating the call for him to be deported in only a few. DrudgeReport.com pretty much forced the story out into the mainstream when he linked to our stories and our petition. So credit goes to DrudgeReport.com for, you know, journalistic standards and sourcing, you know, who originated the story. But it really illustrates the fear of the old dinosaur media that more and more is supporting the fairness doctrine to restrict free speech on talk radio, and that is more and more supporting restrictions of free speech on the internet. And that goes to our next story in a moment, that you have a perfect storm of globalist corrupt, monopolistic insider corporations with corrupt government, along with the old dinosaur dying media that is imploding, has no credibility and is a shadow of what it once was. You have this perfect storm now where they have a real incentive to try to knock out the new media. I mean, Piers Morgan is the top show on CNN, and he has 500,000 viewers on his best night. What was the top number I saw for this year so far? It was 500,000. 556,000. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, I have more listeners than that an hour on my syndicated radio show. And I'm barely in the top 10 of radio shows. I mean, there are some radio shows with 15, 16, 17 million listeners a day on record. And so you've got the old establishment media acting like it's dominant with these huge $10 million sets and all these huge guests. And it is the emperor's new clothes. The emperor is butt naked. It's a reminder of the Billy Idol song, Dancing with Myself. I mean, they've got the music turned up, dancing around in their bedroom or in their kitchen by themselves as if they're in control. But in a way, that hoax still works with some people, even though CNN and MSNBC are pretty much universally hated, except for their small gaggle of communist sympathizers who don't even know it's a corporate fraud system. Still, they're able to put it over on the public that they are the establishment. So it's time to break that fraud and realize, methinks you protest too much. I mean, how did AP and Reuters, and again, thousands of other news articles, I mean, I've scanned over them. I've gone and done the search with Alex Jones or Kurt Nemo or Infowars.com in association with the Piers Morgan story. Go do it yourself. There were a few the day before Christmas, and that's it. So it's just amazing that the, quote, journalistic standards are, they wouldn't tell you that, hey, a talk show host created this. They wouldn't want that to be in the news story. That'd be the first thing. But see, we still win because we don't need the old, dying, fraudulent media. And our goal was to illustrate we've got a foreigner over here fleeing all sorts of criminal justice investigations who is lecturing us. So we win. And quite frankly, I have been mentioned in my website link to before in, let's not exaggerate, 10,000 stories or more in one day. In the case of Charlie Sheen, three or four times in different media events on my radio show. There have been other cases where I've been in thousands and thousands of newspapers. And I want to tell you something. Almost no response. Almost no response in traffic to Infowars.com. But I can go on some local talk show in Chicago or New York or Dallas with a talk show host that is mild-mannered, who is polite, who isn't arrogant, and have the traffic blown off the chart. I can go on Coast to Coast AM, second biggest radio show in the country, 16 million listeners, and it can crash our site. We've gotten 3 or 4 million visitors in one night before. DrudgeReport.com links to us. We could get 1 million, 2 million visitors sometimes. Massive. And again, where's the arrogance? Where is Matt Drudge parading around like he's the Goblin King, Michael Moore? It is just incredible how these people, but that's why kings always wore big crowns and big robes and had people blow trumpets. That's why Hollywood shows up and has fake photographers. You know, they've hired, that's how that started 50, 60 years ago. And the paparazzi grew out of that. They'd have the publicity team from the big, production house there, from the big movie studio, taking the photos as part of the hype, and they'd pay the media to be there, and they'd have free food and hookers for everybody. This is from the 30s, 40s, and 50s of Hollywood. So they created this. Edward Bernays, the father of modern propaganda, bragged that they would merge politicians and movie stars to give government this air of all this royal power. And it's a fraud. But I've thought, just to illustrate it, we should bring like a big gold throne in. And some, like once a week, I should do it with like bling, like a big giant gold chain around my neck and maybe some chicks in bikinis dancing behind me. And I could just get up here and then talk about freedom and liberty and everybody tune in, come with the mainline dumbbells and go, oh, my gosh, this guy, we need to listen to him. He's got two models in bikinis dancing behind him. We got to do that, Rob, who's filming this, as a joke. Might make my wife mad, but the point is that it's all packaging. It's like getting a bag of potato chips. It's giant, and there's like 1 inch of potato chips on the bottom. I mean, it really is a hoax. I mean, they think they're getting to me, showing that they're an organized gaggle, that even when it's on Drudge Report and all these other big sites that we put out the petition, this is a huge international story. And it's caused a debate about why are there not just Morgan, but all these other foreigners here lecturing us. Why do you need to be British to even be on our news nowadays? There's more Brits, it seems, than info babes. And so we won. You fail again. You are jokes. And all the king's horses and all the king's men are not going to put your globalist propaganda system back together again. Just a news flash here. I mean, I could get up here and put on a fake little
little cliched voice and act like William F. Buckley Jr. and Piers Morgan. Oh, that's intriguing. What do you make of the economy and unemployment numbers? You're such a stupid little man saying we need guns to protect ourselves, you little pig. Don't you understand? Bow to me like King George III. Hold on a minute. Hold on, you stupid American rednecks. We'll get your firearms. I'm Piers Morgan. I put out on my Twitter that, yes, I'm a British supremacist, and I've come here to conquer you, you pathetic. Oh, the pathetic rural people in America with firearms. Hold on. I'm so elitist. I'm so powerful.
All right, now let's shift gears to the really, really important news here. Because we are dominating them on the web that for 5-6 years has been bigger than mainstream television and print put together. Mainstream media is not just dying right now on broadcast TV and cable. They're dying on the web. They're going bankrupt there as well. Alternative media is going boom. They're going boom. See, and so they are panicking. But don't just think because everybody hates them and nobody listens to them anymore that they're not dangerous, because they've still got the government and the mega banks behind them. And that's why they're so arrogant. So let's look at this perfect storm of dying dinosaur media and corporate whores and government circling the wagons against the alternative media that is destroying them. Aaron Dykes' InfoWars Facebook shut down. Tens of thousands of followers. A whole bunch of sub-accounts we have just completely shut down. Our big one with 300 and something thousand likes, suspended for now. And guess what? They're all being shut down for. And it's not just us. We're getting phone calls. It's hundreds of other pro-gun, libertarian, conservative, constitutional sites that had any pro-gun information. And as soon as I started covering this, I got a call from Mike Adams, the health ranger, who's going to be sitting in with us tomorrow on the radio. And he said, just like you, because he has a big account, the smaller accounts, they just get rid of them outright. They have suspended us, acting like they're doing due process before they fully ban the account. We've had this happen before. And they're saying, hey, you don't post anything pro-gun. Now, Mike Adams was sent this message, and Paul Watson has an article at InfoWars.com. Facebook purges pro-gun accounts. And it's Gandhi, a famous quote from his own autobiography on page 446, among the many misdeeds of British rule in India, history will look upon the act of depriving a whole nation of arms as the blackest. And Gandhi was nonviolent when people weren't killing you, he said. And you could be nonviolent to illustrate they were in the wrong. But he said when you were being overwhelmingly physically attacked with lethal force, you can go pull up his quotes, just Gandhi on self-defense, that it wasn't just your right, but your duty to defend yourself, echoing the Declaration of Independence. And so the fact that he put out Gandhi and the fact that we put out quotes about real homeland security as an armed citizenry with an image of a woman with a revolver, They want the gun culture dead because it's been taking the Republic back. That's why they're banning three TV shows on Discovery. Other top shows are being shut down that were even finished and produced. That's why they're Cerberus, the biggest gun manufacturer, is shutting down and selling out. That's why all of this is happening, because this is the big push to kill the gun culture, because you can't be an enslaved New World Order colony if you've got guns. So there's that report. And again, here is that image that we've got up at InfoWars.com for now of what they don't want to see you, just from what NaturalNews.com and Mike Adams put out. So understand, ladies and gentlemen, under the new UN treaties and under the new cybersecurity acts, they can just go to your internet service provider and shut you down now, and they're saying they're going to do that. So it's Facebook today, it's everybody else tomorrow. See, the government uses Facebook, the globalists use Twitter, to overthrow governments and put in Sharia law in the Middle East, because they want to destabilize those countries, like Egypt, Syria, and Libya. So the globalists use it when they want to overthrow some country. But when we want to use it to get our republic back, they're like, no, no, no. We use this to surveil and track you slaves. You don't use this. Remember the Navy SEALs a few months ago? They put out a thing pointing out that Navy SEALs needed help in Benghazi. And it just simply said, you know, we asked for help but didn't get it, Mr. President. It was a very popular site run by a bunch of retired Navy SEALs. They just shut it down. So, again, you're veterans. Nice, wholesome, you know, simple statement about, hey, we protect America. We asked for help. We didn't get it. you're banned. You put up something saying, hey, Gandhi said there was a right to be armed. You're banned. Some people, just all their work, everything they did, gone. So they use your content to promote and make money and put out pump and dump stock scams. They even sent an email to Darren McBreen saying, don't have this stuff anymore. We have the quotes here in their letter, or we're going to ban you. So some people are just told, it's not a way to make friends being political. You're not political in America. What do you think this is, America? This is North Korea. Ladies and gentlemen, this is just simply outrageous. You see, if they go after our Second Amendment, they're going to go after the first two. It all comes together. All right, so that's basically the facts on Piers Morgan. I didn't even cover it on my own radio show because of the Dianne Feinstein bills and others saying they're just going to completely ban guns, all semi-autos, make you physically turn them in, other guns to be registered, American gun owners to be fingerprinted. I mean, it's all off the charts. It's even freaking me out, even though I knew it was coming. It is just unprecedented what's happening because the system's decided to drop the hammer. And they want to get a civil war going so that they can have a conflict with the American people and basically call anybody that doesn't submit to tyranny a terrorist. The Homeland Security system was always set up to take over America. It was always set up for libertarians, constitutionalists, true liberals in the sense of Thomas Jefferson. The mainline liberals are not liberals. They're authoritarians. And that's why the Republican establishment's going with them, saying, hey, we'll do Obamacare written by insurance companies, doubling your premiums, total ripoff, doesn't cover pre-existing stuff. Gets rid of charity care. We'll go ahead and ban guns. Yeah. Because this is the time. Because the foreign banks that own America through fraud and the communist Chinese that own our debt, they're saying, hey, take the guns. Communist Chinese last week said that. And then we've got to sit here. No other country in the world would put up with a gaggle of foreigners and synthetic citizens up there telling us that we're slaves and got to turn our guns in. All right, that's it for this edition of InfoWars Nightly News. If you're not a subscriber, be sure and become a subscriber today at InfoWarsNews.com. One membership for $5.95 a month is 10 memberships. You can go get a membership, username, passcode, then share it with friends and family. And if you won't reach out to others so they can come here and learn the truth, when we're really the tip of the spear, we don't have a hope. The good news is our listenership is exploding. We're getting a lot of new affiliates every single day. In fact, I've got a big list of them over here I covered on the radio today. But again, become subscribers at PrisonPlanet.tv because if they shut us down on YouTube and other platforms as they're trying, you'll still be able to come to PrisonPlanet.tv and get these reports and burn them to disk because there may be coming a day where you're not going to be able to get this information anymore. Okay? Appreciate PrisonPlanet.tv. Appreciate InfoWars.com. Appreciate us busting our butts here to get you this information. Not that I'm high and mighty and, hey, I'm really doing a good job. We're in a fight, folks. And we are fighting hard to get you this information warfare ammunition. So use it. The truth is powerful. It trumps lies. But you've got to face these globalists down. Michael Moore is not a liberal. He's an authoritarian pig with six bodyguards. One of them just got arrested with his gun at the airport. I've been roughed up by them. Or they tried to rough me up, bumped into me, hit me, whatever, and I hit them back. It's all on video in my film, Martial Law. The point is that all of these people have their own bodyguards. Obama, David Gregory, all these pigs. These are authoritarians who want you disarmed. You're their food. You're their energy units they feed off of. They want a global government with 80%+ taxes where you're taxed to the point where you're living in a 250-square-foot box. That's Agenda 21. This isn't a freaking game. World government's being announced. So get aggressive now. In fact, tomorrow night on the Friday edition, we're going to have a bunch of solutions and information warfare operations you can launch in your area. Alex Jones signing off for this edition of InfoWars Nightly News. Use this information while it's still here. They're trying to start a civil war. The path we're going on, we may not be here much longer.